Thanks very much. Can you hear me? Yes, very good. So I'll be talking about compressed sensing and big data. And I just also want to mention that this is joint work with Bogdan Roman, who's also a member of the group. I'm going to start by addressing a fundamental problem in big data, and that is exchange of information. So you all know this very well. Facebook, Netflix, Instagram, iTunes. Most of you may have an iPhone or a smartphone. And what we do on a daily basis is that we exchange information. It can be video, images, sound, text. And that represents an enormous amount of data. And we would like to transmit this and exchange the information fast, and we want it to be accurate. And that's actually a very demanding mathematical problem. There's an enormous amount of mathematics that actually goes on under the hood in these tools that we use every day. And I'm going to speak a little bit about compression, because we cannot simply exchange all these enormous amount of data without compressing them first. We have a lot of data, and we need to compress them to be essentially be able to transmit it and exchange the information. And one key thing is the use of wavelets. And you don't need to know exactly what wavelets are. And I'm in trouble here. I might actually lose my 15 pounds. I'm going to explain these very carefully. The idea about wavelets is that they have a very, very nice property. And that is that, say, an image, for example, I'm going to call it F. I can express that as a sum of some numbers. We call them wavelet coefficients. These are really numbers. And these functions here, phi n's, which are, we call them wavelets. And the peculiar phenomenon is that we need only few of these coefficients here to represent, say, an image rather accurately. And this is what we do. So if you upload your image to, say, Facebook, what we do is that we compute these coefficients here, and then we're going to see that there's actually very few of them that are big. There's a lot of them that are very small. And the ones that are very small, we set them to zero. And then when they're zero, we don't care. And this is the core of what we call modern compression. I'm going to show you a very, very simple example of this. So here, this is an image of the Earth. This is a very high resolution image. It takes a lot of space, and there's a lot of data here. Now, if I would like to upload this on Facebook, well, if everybody took all their images and uploaded on Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg will drown in data. So what we do is that we compute these wavelet coefficients of this image and throw away 99% of them, keep only the 1% of the largest one. And then we can sort of map that back to the image, and this is what we get. You see? This thing here requires only 1% of the information. So this is what we do. We actually compress the large data into smaller data without losing very much information. And in this way, we say that the world is sort of sparse in wavelets. We can actually represent the world in a clever way so that it actually doesn't need that much data, but still we're able to represent it reasonably accurately. For those who are interested, here is an actual image of one of these wavelets. This is an example of a Daubechy wavelet. This is named after Ingrid Daubechy, who invented some of these wavelets. And they have sort of these sort of wavy characteristics, hence the name. So that was a little bit about modern compression. Now, big data we see in also other fields as well. One is, for example, medicine. And in particular, in medical imaging. So here is an MRI scanner. And an MRI machine essentially allows us to see sort of inside the body. Now, the MRI machine takes samples. It gathers a lot of data in order to get an image of what's inside the body. It doesn't sample the image itself. It actually samples what's called the Fourier transform of the image. And what that means is that it takes all the data, and then it has to be decoded back into an image that we can actually look at. The problem is that this process actually takes a long time. And to be able to get an accurate image, you need to take a lot of data, and that's costly. So what one would like to do is to do that process in the best possible way. And I'm now going to show you some examples on how we can do this by using the idea of compressed sensing. So it was not a complete accident that I showed you the compression in the beginning, because if it really turns out that we can sort of compress big data in the real world, it also suggests that we can sense or sample in a compressed way, and that's hence the name, compressed sensing. We're going to essentially use that kind of structure to be able to sample in a clever way. And to show you how this works, I'm simply going to run you through an example. So here is a brain. And what we're going to do now is that we're going to simulate an MRI machine. So the machine is going to take the samples, and we're going to try to reconstruct that from the MRI machine data that it takes. So what we've done here is that we have hidden a little brain tumor here, and the task is to be able to reconstruct that with the best possible method that we can do. So here is what you would typically see if you went to Addenbrooke's and got an MRI scan. This is a standard resolution that you would get. This is 512 by 512. And here's what you can see. Here is actually the brain tumor. Now, this is indeed a synthetic experiment, and our poor synthetic patient not only has very aggressive cancer cells, but they're so sophisticated, and they're indeed so sophisticated that they form a sentence. And the only cure for our patient is that you need to read that sentence. So, can you read it? No. So one thing we could do is that we could essentially put the patient back into the MRI machine again and take even more data so that we can see if we could possibly enhance the resolution, right? But that's the whole point. What we want to do now is to be clever. We would like to sample in a very clever way, and we're not going to take more information. We're going to take exactly the same amount of information. We're going to sample it in a very, very different way. It's the same amount, but not the same samples. And then we're going to use these compressed sensing techniques and see if we can save the patient. So the whole point is that the first one and the second experiment requires exactly the same amount of information, but the information is different. So in this case here, we can actually resolve it. And now you may ask, how on earth did you do it? So the way we do it is by sampling a different kind of information in this way here. We essentially sample from a higher resolution, and this is the exact sampling scheme that's used in this case. So a white dot indicates that we've taken a sample, and a black, we haven't. So if we have taken all the samples, this would have been completely white. And if you see here, what we're doing is a lot of subsampling. We're taking fewer measurements from a larger resolution, and then we use that. So the first thing we should ask us is, does this actually work in practice? This was a synthetic experiment. So especially when there's a mathematician like me showing you something which is synthetic, you should ask, does it really work in real life, right? So the experiment here actually comes from a paper of ours. We put it on the archive roughly January last year. And I'll tell you a story. So we thought that maybe some of these ideas would be interesting for commercial manufacturers. So we contacted Siemens. So Siemens is one of the largest MRI manufacturers. And we asked them if they would be interested. And the response that we got from Siemens was somewhat interesting. They said, thanks so much for getting in touch. However, we already implemented your stuff on our machines. So what Siemens did was that they replicated this example here, where they reprogrammed their machine to essentially imitate the sampling scheme that we suggest. And this is essentially the art. It's the art is to understand how you do that kind of sampling. And that's a mathematical task. But what Siemens showed us, you can actually do this on a real MRI machine. And the conclusion of the Siemens experiments that is, indeed, you can greatly improve the resolution of the image. So, yes, one can do that with these kinds of compressed sensing techniques. So this was a very simple example of how compressed sensing can be used. It doesn't mean that compressed sensing can be used only in MRI, for example. Here is a list of big data inverse problems where compressed sensing is already heavily used or can be used. And the ones here that are in blue are essentially fields that our group are involved directly in applications, meaning that we work either with commercial manufacturers or groups here at the University of Cambridge and essentially help them on how to do the sample in the best possible way so that they get the best out of their data. So I'm going to end by also mentioning that compressed sensing is not just for inverse problems. So some of you may know Netflix. And if you've ever tried Netflix and you've seen a movie or a TV show, Netflix will ask you what you think of that show, right? You rate it. And the reason why Netflix does this is that it will like to essentially understand what kind of movies you like so that it can give you a prediction. Maybe you like this movie or that movie. And Netflix is not only the company that does this or wants this. Amazon or essentially any company that would like to recommend a product would like to know your preferences. And this is known as the Netflix problem. Netflix started essentially this. And the key thing here is that Netflix doesn't know all the movies that you've seen, nor does Netflix know how you rated all those movies. So essentially what they're ending up with is a problem of missing data. So not only do they have a large part of data, but it's actually missing. And I'm not going to go into the details, but if you think about the picture that I showed you on this subsampling, what we did there was essentially treating a problem with missing data. And you can do the similar thing. And in fact, the Netflix algorithm does similar things, where you essentially try to use techniques to compensate for these missing data so that they can be able to essentially predict the movies that you'll like. So to sum up, compressed sensing is a very nice tool in a lot of different areas that are connected to big data, medical imaging, Netflix problem, inverse problems in general. And hopefully this gave you a little bit of a clue what compressed sensing is. If you're interested in more details, Bogdan Roman will be giving a departmental seminar on February 11th at the Computer Lab. It's the Wednesday seminar where he'll be giving a more detailed talk about compressed sensing in applications. And with that, I thank you so much for your attention.